Good morning. Welcome to Faithfully Memphis here on WYXR 91.7. FM. My name is Drew Massengale, and I am the minister to children at Church of the Holy Communion in East Memphis, which is attached to the St. Mary's Episcopal Girls School. My guest today is Mary Henry Thompson, the inimitable Mary Henry Thompson, who comes to us from the St. Mary's Girls School, where she is the assistant chaplain for the North Campus, which is the little ones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Early childhood and lower school.
And how long have you been there, Mary Henry?
This is my 10th year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is my 7th month as minister to children at Church of the Holy Communion. And it's been a really wonderful ride so far.
Yeah. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Me too. We have a saint of the day. We actually have two saints for today. Our saints for today are John and Charles Wesley. The Wesley brothers, John born in 1703 and Charles in 1707, were leaders of the evangelical revival in the Church of England in the 18th century. Their strict adherence to the worship and discipline of the Book of Common Prayer earned them the nickname, them and their society, the nickname Methodists. Maybe you've heard of them. So John was he had a gift for preaching, and Charles had more of a gift for writing. So John, being a really powerful preacher, actually traveled around and averaged at one point 8,000 miles of travel a year around England, mostly on horseback. They came over to America for a few years, and they were in Georgia, but that was apparently not a great time for them, so they returned to the Church of England. And while John was working with a group of Moravians, he experienced what he called a strange warming of his heart, strong emotional awareness of the love of Christ. I want to share a story that I was reading while I was researching these saints. This is about John's he came from a really classical philosophical background. He studied a lot of different philosophers, and the moniker Methodist might give you kind of this sense that, you know, he was very sort of by the book. I'm going to talk about one of these early Methodist meetings that was being led by a lay preacher, not an ordained person, just a person from the community who had very limited education. And so this preacher had Luke 19, verse 21, as his text that he was preaching on, which goes, "Lord, I feared thee because thou art an austere man." And not knowing the word austere, he thought that the text spoke of an oyster man.
Huh.
So he spoke about the work of those who retrieve oysters from the seabed. The diver plunges down from the surface and, you know, he's cut off from his natural environment into bone-chilling water. He gropes in the dark, cutting his hands on the sharp edges of shells. Now he has the oyster and kicks back up to the surface, up to the warmth and the light and the air, clutching his in his torn and bleeding hands the object of his search, the oyster. And so Christ, you know, descended from glory of heaven into the squalor of earth, into sinful human society in order to retrieve humans. Apparently 12 souls were convinced that evening by this preacher. Now, afterwards, someone complained to John Wesley about the inappropriateness of allowing preachers who were too ignorant to know the meaning of the texts that they were preaching on, and Wesley's reply was, "Never mind, the Lord got a dozen oysters tonight." So those are your saints of the day. Well, that is John, that's the one saint. Charles, the other saint, who was better known as a hymn writer, wrote over 6,000 hymns, including about 600 for the sacrament of the Lord's Supper. Some of his best known ones are Christ the Lord is Risen Today, Come, thou long expected Jesus. Hark, the herald angels sing.
We could just have a sing along right now.
We could have a sing along right now. I was thinking about playing some Vince Guaraldi on the on the program.
Let's do it.
We could find the Hark the Herald Angels Sing that the Peanuts Gang sings. That'd be a lot of fun. Oh for a Thousand Tongues to Sing. There's an amazing number. If you look in the back of the 82 hymnal, there are all the folks that provided text. And Charles Wesley, he's got like 3 lines worth of hymn tunes that he's put words to, or words that have been used on different hymn tunes, and so much more than any other contributor in that section.
I love that.
Yeah.
I just learned something new.
Yeah. I just learned it today. I'd like to share one of the texts that I kind of looked up. I leafed through the hymnal and I came across one that we don't sing it in the church where I attend, when I do attend my home church, St. Mary's Cathedral. And we have not sung it here either, so I don't know if it's a familiar one. But it's called Come, O Thou Traveler Unknown. Come, O Thou Traveler Unknown, whom still I hold but cannot see. My company before is gone, and I am left alone with thee. With thee all night I mean to stay, and wrestle till the break of day. I need not tell thee who I am, my misery or sin declare. Thyself hast called me by my name, look on thy hands and read it there. But who, I ask, who art thou? Tell me thy name and tell me now. Yield to me now, for I am weak but confident in self-despair. Speak to my heart, in blessings speak, be conquered in my instant prayer. Speak, or thou never hence shalt move, and tell me if thy name is love. 'Tis love, 'tis love, thou died'st for me. I hear thy whisper in my heart. The morning breaks, the shadows flee. Pure universal love thou art. Thy mercies never shall remove. Thy nature and thy name is love. Charles Wesley, Saint of the Day. So, Mary Henry Thompson, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you today?
I'm doing well as well, thanks.
Good.
Finally got some coffee, so we are talking about praying off script.
I love that.
Yes, I mean it's the name of the game as far as my experience has gone with kids. You can plan and you can research and you can do all the things you're supposed to do, but when you get into the room, it's the kids are directing the conversation, and if you're not on board with what they're wanting to talk about, then
And we Episcopalians love our scripts, don't we?
yes, we do.
We're good at scripts.
We
We
can just
like them. And when we
hand
veer
everybody a
off of our
fire.
script, we get a little uncomfortable. I love this idea of praying off script. I went to a Quaker college. So actually, when you were talking about the Wesley brothers and how one of them was convinced, that is the terminology that the Quakers use as well. So
Convinced.
if you become a Quaker, you are convinced. So you have birthright friends and then you have convinced
Oh, I
friends.
love it. Okay.
And if the process of becoming a Quaker is a lot of work, as it should be within a community and with groups of people, but it's a convincement, it's not a conversion, which I have always thought was really cool. And also, given that the Quakers are not big script people, it is my time in my Quaker college that allowed me to be comfortable going off script. To go from all on script all the time to a Quaker college where we sat in silence before every class, waiting to be moved by the Spirit, certainly taught me to stop and to be quiet and to listen. And I think if I had not had that experience, I don't think I could do what I do now because it's a lot more stopping and listening and a lot less looking at the book. If we look at the book, you're not going to hear from God all the time.
Not all the time, exactly.
I love the book. I love sitting in a liturgy. I probably feel the most home there. But I am really thankful for having learned how to sit in silence and to listen, because it's in those quiet moments that I'm much more likely to hear something important.
It is so interesting that you bring up that topic. One of the other figures in my life who is immensely influential was Fred Rogers,
Oh,
Mr. Rogers.
I love Fred
I don't
Rogers. That
know.
was my favorite show as a kid. I loved Sesame Street. And then right after Sesame Street was Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I loved it. And then the electric company came on and it was like loud and in your face and it made me very uncomfortable.
That was a big
It was
transition,
a really hard transition for me. So perhaps like in retrospect, I should have known that like I needed a quiet space to gather my thoughts and be who I am, because I am a huge Fred Rogers fan.
I have to wonder if they programmed that for being that way. Because Sesame Street is all boisterous and music and stuff. And then here, have a little,
Here, everybody settle down now.
settle down and just be who you are, and that's great, and that's wonderful, and it's fine. We use our imaginations. And then, oh Lord, the electric company was just another world
Oh,
of.
and they would scream and they would come flying at the
Oh, that's
screen.
right.
Oh,
All these film effects and things like
yeah,
that.
no, I did not like that.
But anyway, so I was watching an interview. Charlie Rose was interviewing Mr. Rogers in the late 90s. And Charlie asked Fred, he said, who's made a difference in your life? And of course, Fred said, oh, a lot of people. But he said, a lot of people who allowed me to have some silence. And this is Fred's words. I don't think we give that gift very much anymore. I'm very concerned that our society is much more interested in information than wonder, in noise rather than silence. It is a discipline to sit in silence. If we were to sit in silence right now on the radio for 5 seconds, it would seem like an eternity.
It'd be fine with me, but
Oh, yeah.
not everyone would like that.
Let's try. No, let's
No,
not.
let's not try it. Let's not try it.
Indeed,
We don't
but
want to make anybody uncomfortable today,
indeed.
at least when it comes to silence, anyway.
But no, I regard these words as really kind of prophetic in a way, but he was also speaking very much in his time,
Well, and that was before we were on the 24-hour news bombardment. I mean, I went to college in 93. And so I am really glad that I went to college when I did, because it was before cell phones and it was before social media and it was before 24-hour news. And I am very grateful that I got to have the experience of total quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you had to go check your answering machine if somebody called, to see if somebody called.
It was in like a fixed location.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't expect to call 5 minutes.
You would go knock on somebody's door. I mean, the idea of community was so there. And we have community now. It just looks different. Mm-hmm. But I am still very close friends with a group of women that I went to college with who are all, in my opinion, significantly smarter than I am. They all have these like crazy advanced degrees and they get quoted in the Washington Post talking about things that I don't understand when it comes to like what's happening in Russia and Kyiv.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, whoa, I'm going to talk to 5-year-olds today.
Yes.
And they're like, we don't know how to do that. And so, but those women who are in public policy, they are, one's a vet, one's a doctor, one is a professor at Ole Miss, like one works in the lab at Los Alamos.
Oh my gosh.
And then there's me. and they laugh. They're like, well, yeah, we have a whole lot more degrees than you do, but like, you know how to talk to humans and it's not always our gift.
Yeah.
And you know, we left there, even in college, like when there was something going on, you were the one that we came to. And even now, like if there's something somebody needs, they're like, Mary Henry's going to have an answer for that. She's going to help us with that. And, you know, I don't know where it came from, but it has to have come from all my time in the church and my time with the kids.
Yeah. So when did you know? When did you know that this was going to be your career path?
Oh, my gosh. That is such a hard question. When I was in middle school, this is going to be a long answer.
Sorry.
When I was in middle school, I went to, we moved to Germantown when I was in middle school and I finished sixth grade at St. George's and then I went to Farmington. And the seventh and eighth grade hallway was on the same hall with all of the special ed classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I much preferred hanging out with the children in the special ed classes than I did hanging out with the people in my classes. Mm-hmm. I'd moved here from Selma, Alabama to Germantown. I have one hand. So I was always drawn to being in a place where I could help people. And I wasn't scared of a child in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. That wasn't scary to me, like it is for so many people.
Yeah.
And so I got to spend like my recess time teaching a boy who had autism to sign, eat and drink when I was in, I think, the eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And he was nonverbal. He was way bigger than me, older than me. Mm-hmm. And I spent every recess for my entire eighth grade teaching this boy how to sign, eat and drink. You know, that must have planted a seed in me. And from that time forward, I was going to go to Vanderbilt and I was going to major in education and I was going to be a teacher and I was going to be the best special education teacher ever. I did not do that. I went off to college. And in high school, I was very involved with the church. I did a lot of happening. I was an acolyte. I mean, I lived on the church property. They would come get me out of bed to acolyte if an acolyte didn't show up. But I was always in those helping roles.
Mm-hmm.
Even within the context of the church and even at school, I worked in the library. I helped people in the library. And then when I went off to college, I decided I didn't want to be an ed major because you had to double major and you had to go abroad. And that was terrifying to me. My little scared self didn't want to do that. And if anyone ever asked me a regret, it's that I didn't go abroad in college.
Yeah.
I will make my children do it because we should all get out of our comfort zones and which we do every day. But some of us do. But somebody needed to shove me onto the airplane and that didn't happen. I'm the third kid, like, you know, whatever. So. But in college, I was a hall director. I was a TA for a class called Jesus at 2000 that I got to teach with this Quaker man who is one of my heroes and one of my all-time favorite people. He has influenced me so much. And it was, you know, right about the time that Jesus would have been about 2000 years old.
Okay.
And so that was fun. But that's when I got to start teaching for the first time, knowing that that's what I was doing. And then I got out of college with no plan and no idea what I was going to do. because I'm the third kid. Mm-hmm. And I ended up coming home and was miserable. Mm-hmm. My friends were also home, and we were all living with our parents, and we all knew we wanted to do something. And one of us was cleaning carpets, and I was answering phones. It's funny now. I mean, this was a long time ago. Right before I left Memphis, my friend and I were up for the same job at Grace St. Luke's to be the director of youth ministry. And he got the job and I did not, which to this day, and even then I knew was a gift because I didn't want to stay here. I wanted to go away.
You wanted to go abroad.
Yeah, but like to North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Like not, you know, Italy. Moravia would be fabulous.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, so I ended up becoming a youth minister at Christ Church in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is right downtown, right on the square, mm-hmm. right across from the Capitol. And I was put in charge of this youth program, and I was like 22 years old or 23 years old. And and I mean, I do laugh about the Episcopal Church and other churches, too, is that we put 23-year-olds in charge of really big, hard stuff, mm-hmm. which I'm thankful for because I learned a lot. After taking pilgrimages to Ireland, I took 20 kids to Ireland. I took 30 kids to Italy, which was phenomenal, mm-hmm. but I'm really glad I quit my job. Yeah, I quit before we went to Italy, but I had quit my job before we went. I knew when I got back, I was only going to be working for a little while because it was hard. And I was 25, and like the burnout rate for a youth minister mm-hmm. is 8 months.
I didn't know it was that low.
It is 8 months.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's for the big kids. You're working with little kids. This was for the big, you know, I had sixth through 12th graders. Mm-hmm. There were 300 of them on the books. I was teaching confirmation. Wow. Like, it was huge. Yeah.
And you were the one.
And I was the one. And the clergy, you know, they would work with, I have a meeting tonight, so I'm not working this afternoon. And I was like, I'm here all the time. and I love those clergy. I mean, they are good friends of mine.
Oh, sure.
And I learned so much from so many of them. But I was done.
Yeah.
I was done.
Well,
and
you had written Sustainable Youth Ministry at that point.
No.
Yeah.
No. And, you know, it just, I don't miss it. I love the kids that I got to know who are now lovely grown-ups with children the same ages as mine because I was all of 3 years older than they were.
Yep.
You know, they probably all got married before I did. And then I just left. I mean, I quit. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a job. Mm. And I ended up moving to Charlotte and raising money for a hospital. And like, I was done.
Mm.
But it was a nice sabbatical from what I knew. I learned, I mean, I had the skills to raise money, but it was nice to know that, learn them, hone them,
yes.
as it were. And then I got the job at Canooga.
Mm-hmm.
I was 30 years old and I moved to Hendersonville, North Carolina, single and like happy. Canooga is the Episcopal Conference Center in Western North Carolina, just outside of Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been a part of my life forever. My grandfather was the Bishop of Western North Carolina from 1946 or 7 till he died in 1975.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, like mm-hmm. the Diocesan Center is the Henry Center. The camp is Camp Henry. And so, you know, my mother grew up with the diocesan office in her backyard. My mom started working at Canooga when she was 11 in the dining room.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. Like send the bishop's kid out there. Right. And her brother is a priest as well, who actually was in Raleigh the same time I was. Ending up at Canooga was sort of my lifelong dream. And to end up in the program department where I got to help plan the conferences that I had, you know, coordinated when I was a youth minister. It was my dream job at 30. You know, mm-hmm. I was living my best life. And mm-hmm. and then I actually, while I was there, I met my husband who had just graduated from college and mm-hmm. he was the camp director. And we became friends. And then clearly we became more than friends and got married and there and baptized both of our children there. So the friendships and relationships that I have from Canooga, I will have forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't start naming the people because there's too many of them. Yeah. And some of them are family, and some of them are my children's godparents, and their children are my godchildren. But it was Canuga, too, that was pivotal in me learning that I did want to work with people in some way. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to Memphis, when Brad took the job at St. Columba, the Episcopal Conference Center here,
yes,
in
our own little Canuga.
Our own little Canuga here in here in West Tennessee.
Out in Old Bartlett.
Out in Bartlett on Billy Mayer Road. Road. Yeah.
Check them out.
We do. We have a lake.
And Mud Camp.
And Mud Camp. We love Mud Camp. He got the job, and we had a daughter when we moved here. We still have her. She's 12. But at the time, she wasn't even two. And I was really burnt out. Like, I was done. And we moved here, and a dear friend of mine we moved here in September. And long about December or January, a friend of mine said, "Hey, there's going to be a job opening up at St. Mary's that you might be interested in." No, that wasn't how it said. She said, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do now that you're here?" And I was like, "I don't know. I really like the littles. Now that I have a child of my own, yeah. I love her questions." Mm-hmm. And then she goes, "Okay, great. There's a job opening." And so the job opened up at St. Mary's for this assistant chaplain job. And within 24 hours of it being posted, 7 people had called me or emailed me telling me I needed to apply for it. And if that is not a burning bush, I don't know what is. Yeah. And I applied for it with no teaching experience other than, you know, conferences and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I look back now, like, I so appreciate that they hired me. I don't know why they did. Clearly, they saw something in me that I didn't even know was there. And 10 years later, I am so grateful for that because I have the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, I get to teach little girls how to be kind to each other and how to love one another and all that that means. And it's pretty great, mm-hmm. especially given the diversity of the students that I work with. I have Muslims, I have Jews, I have all types of Christians, I have nuns, I have Hindus, like so many different types of people. And how do you create a message from the message that can pertain to everyone? And the beauty is that I have learned this idea of the golden rule is in every world religion.
Yes.
And it's all about loving our neighbors and listening to our neighbors. And so, you know, once I got that part down, you know, the rest just kind of fell. It kind of fell in. And, you know, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I love being able to just know what the kids are bringing, because they are always bringing, whether they are cheerful or mm-hmm. grumpy or mm-hmm. just, you know, occupied, you know, in their mind or, mm-hmm. or whatever, they're bringing their genuine selves.
Uh-huh. Most definitely.
And they're also, you know, they're also bringing what they are learning in the outside world, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and it's always an experience. It's always it's always going to be a different cake that gets baked.
Oh yeah. It's never going to be the recipe that you had.
It's never going to be the recipe.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Because you don't have any coriander, but you have all this garam masala that is coming in, and
you never know. Yeah. And I did. It's funny, as an Episcopalian, I am such a human of routine. Mm-hmm. Like and. My father is very, everything has its place. So that was the house that I grew up in.
Oh, wow.
And I love that, but I am not really good at that. Like, I'm kind of a mess, mm-hmm. to be honest, but I do like things where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And having children helped shake that. But teaching children has helped sort of shake that idea that everything has to have a place.
Yeah.
And if I go into a classroom knowing that we're going to talk about the disciples, I also need to know that who knows where that conversation's going to go.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it might end up being about soccer. Like, you never know. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, playing outside over the weekend, or we didn't have power for 9 days, Miss Thompson.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, what was that like? Well, it was fun. I was like, how are mom and dad doing? How are your pants feeling? I think mom's a little tired. I think she is. Maybe we should say some extra prayers for her today, yes. You know, and, you know, but it's just so fun.
Yeah.
It is so much fun to listen to little people because mm-hmm. they are so much wiser than we are. I remember reading a book. I wish I could remember the name of the book. Maybe I'll remember the name of the book. And it talks about, and it's a nonfiction. I mean, it is a fiction book. Like it was one of those, like, I'm going to read this because I want to go away. It was an escape book. Uh-huh. And there's this whole section about how children start losing their magic at 9.
Oh.
And I didn't understand it until I became a mother, and I didn't understand it until I became a teacher. But there is this like great awakening at 9 and in the third grade. And I say this as the mother of a current third grader, where all of a sudden the world that was magical is big and scary,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's, I mean, I call it the great awakening of third grade. Like it happens across the board yeah. because you're learning in a different way. You're like reading to learn instead of learning to read.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden your eyes are open to the fact that you are not the center of the universe anymore.
Yeah.
And it's really hard.
I think I remember third grade as being the first year that we did not have a guaranteed recess.
Yeah.
And that felt like a big
yeah.
leap.
Yeah, that was probably illegal.
Yeah, you know,
actually.
It was the 80s.
Oh, yeah. There were no rules in the 80s. No.
It just only become aware of children.
I mean, and now we know that like recess is more important than all the other stuff that
exactly,
we do at school.
Yeah.
Like every kid should be having like 3 hours of recess.
3 hours of recess and 4 music ensembles.
Well, and that.
Paint.
And I know just from being with the kids, like watching them at recess is how they learn to interact with the world.
Yep.
We can teach them
quote,
all know, we want.
Play is the work of children.
It is.
Yeah.
And watching them play mm-hmm. and watching them get into conflict,
mm-hmm.
which no, I hate conflict. It makes me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But watching kids get into a conflict and fix it.
Yep.
That's just, what it's all about.
Discover these little roles that they don't even know
yeah.
they're filling, you
uh-huh.
know, a peacemaker.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or, you know, hiding under a bench and hoping nobody talks to them.
Right.
But I don't really know many kids that do that. But,
yeah.
You know, it's scary becoming a human being. And when you wake up at 9 and you are a human being, all of a sudden you're like, wait,
yeah, no,
I want to go back to that time where I didn't have to worry about anything.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But, I remember Charlie Brown in one of the Peanuts comic strips monologuing in the back seat of
mm-hmm.
the car,
mm-hmm.
and driving home. It's nighttime, and he is talking about being in the back seat, and all he wants to do is be in the front seat because that is like that's where everything is happening.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the conversations and you
mm-hmm.
can change the radio dial and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realizes, but once you're in that front seat, you can't go back to the back
seat. You can't go back to the back seat.
Looking out the window at the moon for 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess if we can get through that and then still remember that maybe we need to make ourselves look at the moon for 20 minutes.
Yes, the backseat is always there.
The backseat is always there.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need to go to the backseat.
Yeah. And just be silent.
And be silent.
And just, yeah.
Back to the silence.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my next question was going to be how did and or do you develop your philosophy on education? But I think we've heard a lot about just your general approach.
I mean, it really has been in the last 10 years. I mean, mm-hmm. it has been at St. Mary's to fully understand and like walking into a classroom and watching all of these other amazing people teach things that are like really important,
mm-hmm.
you know, like math and reading. And
mm-hmm.
Not that what I teach isn't important. I actually do know what I teach is very important.
Yes.
But just learning that every child is an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that you cannot walk into a room full of children and think saying one thing one way is going to, they're all going to hear it.
Now, oh my gosh, that is for some reason such novel information,
isn't it?
That we're only just discovering.
That we're just discovering, yeah. And I think it has been such a gift to me to learn each child and meet her exactly where she is on that day at that time, and to be able to look at kid A, who is spinning around in circles, and I think she's not hearing a word that I'm saying. But in all actuality, she could quote me verbatim and then give me a meaning of everything that I just said. Yeah. And those kids are the ones that have taught me the most. The ones who are a little bit outside of the box, mm-hmm. they're a little bit, you know, like don't put them in a box because they are not, you can't. And what I have learned is you can't put any kid in a box. Mm-hmm. Like they are all amazing humans. Like they're all amazing human beings. And like, it's just amazing to get to have the experience to listen to them and to be with them and to love them. Mm-hmm. Like it's a gift. It's a responsibility, but it's such a gift.
Yeah. I think that people in our profession, in our calling, our vocation, mm-hmm. our vocation, tend to sometimes lose sight of that fact that we, that it is a gift that we have, mm-hmm. to be able to see that and to be able, mm-hmm. to find joy in, you know, mm-hmm. discovering you know, who these little humans are becoming. Mm-hmm. It's not something that everybody recognizes. Uh-uh. It's, you know, Paul says, you know, we all have our different gifts, and he never mentions specifically talking to children, or
because children were ignored back then.
It's true, exactly. Yeah,
but I get to teach pre-K through fifth grade, so it's a really wide span, yeah. of you know, a 3-year-old to an 11-year-old.
Yes. Yep. That is my
and I've grown some of these children, like some of them I feel like they're my own. I've been, mm-hmm. teaching them since they were two.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. My wife, Angela, is, mm-hmm. she's the librarian and tech media teacher at St. George's, mm-hmm. Memphis campus, and said she deals with the exact same, mm-hmm. age group.
Yep. Like
pre-K through fifth grade. If you had told her that this is what she'd be doing, you know, when she graduated college, she would have laughed in your face.
Oh, me too. yeah. If you had told me that I would be teaching at St. Mary's Episcopal School for Girls, mm-hmm. when I was 22 years old, I would have said, no way. Mm-hmm. There's no way, one, that I will get back to Memphis, mm-hmm. and two, that I could ever teach there, ever. You know, but mm-hmm. 10 years in,
They like you.
They must like me.
Yeah.
We'll find out, I guess.
Nobody better. <That's been> long, apparently.
They took a chance, I guess. So.
So tell me about what your teacher toolkit looks like.
My teacher toolkit. Well, that's funny that, mm-hmm. you asked that question. I am not a crafty person. Mm-hmm. So my teacher toolkit is very much full of intangible things. Mm-hmm. My teacher toolkit consists of eye contact, listening ears, mm-hmm. The ability to ask questions, mm-hmm. The ability to get down on the same level as a child, like the actual physical level. Because sometimes they need that. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes, mm-hmm. they want you higher than them. Like, that's a comforting feeling for a kid. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they want you eye to eye. Like, they want to know that you can speak their language. And then sometimes to get them to be silent when I want them to be silent. Mm-hmm. You can't just tell a group of kids to be silent.
No.
Crayons and paper. And we do a fair amount of praying in color, which,
oh, wow.
Do you know about that?
No.
Sybil Macbeth, who used to live in Memphis, has a book called Praying in Color and a blog. Mm-hmm. Her husband was the rector at Calvary.
Okay.
And now they're in Jerusalem.
Yeah. Oh, that's, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now they're in Jerusalem.
Andy
Macbeth. And I actually knew Andy's brother, was one of my volunteers, mm-hmm. in Raleigh, North Carolina, because the world is really minute. It's very small.
Let's pause for a moment because I want to make sure. Doesn't Andy listen? I had heard at one point we get metric. Oh no, I'm sorry. Andy tunes into the online services.
Well, you know, we can tell him that we've talked about him.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely listens to this podcast.
Oh, cool. Oh, good.
I mean, now that you've mentioned it, I will make sure he listens to it.
We'll make sure he hears that. Oh, he's getting a mention.
Goals.
But Sybil, anyway. I mean, as an Episcopalian, mm-hmm. I was taught to pray in a very specific way. I even had a Sunday school teacher who, when I questioned the way that I was being told to pray, told me that I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Though I did go home to my dad and yell about that. Yes. And he was like, honey, you're right. But like, just let it go. And then it was taking on this role. Like, how do you teach kids to be silent? Like, it's hard. But Sybil Macbeth has this great thing of praying in color where you draw a shape, any shape you want, mm-hmm. that speaks to you. Then you write the name of someone you want to pray for in the shape. Or, like, at Advent, we'll use different words like peace and love. Mm-hmm. And then in silence, you doodle in and around the shape and the name. And then when you're done, you know, you lay your crayons down and you say amen. And so we've done this whole prayer in silence, yet we can see it. Mm-hmm. And so then the kids have a tangible piece of paper that they can hold up and be like, look who I prayed for today.
That's amazing.
And
I'm using that.
You should. It is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
It is pretty phenomenal. And as a grown up, like, I can say the Lord's Prayer all day long,
sure.
But you know what? I could say the Lord's Prayer if I was unconscious, mm-hmm. right? What I love about
the trick is remembering whether you're supposed to stop after temptation.
I just keep going every time. Unless I'm leading Compline, of course, right? Or evening prayer.
Compline.
Anyway, what I love about this, too, for those of us who have a hard time focusing when we're praying.
I don't know anybody like that.
I don't either. The whole time you're staring at the name of the person you're praying for. And I've also done it sort of with kids rather than praying that way in like a Lectio Divina type way, mm-hmm. where like pick a word that you hear in this passage. And then we're going to meditate on the word in color. Mm. And we usually do that around Christmas time, you know, and they all
it's
pick out.
Time,
yeah. And they all pick out different words. And it's a time when we need to slow down. Yep. Like Christmas in a school is crazy.
Yep.
It's nutty. It's glorious, but it's nutty. It is not Advent-y at all.
No, there's no meditation.
No. So I work really hard to bring that. Even those tiny little pockets mm-hmm. of quiet and meditation to the kids, because it's the only time they're going to get it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I had something that I was going to say, and I don't remember what it was going to be, but thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. You should do it, though. It's great. It's a great book.
Oh, yeah. I'd asked you about your philosophy, mm-hmm. and now I've asked you about your teacher toolkit. And you even talked about sort of in your background, you've got a special way of reaching people who may have needs beyond just the typical challenges, you mm-hmm. know, of childhood and adolescence. I wonder if you'd like to speak on that at all.
To me, it's just who I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that not everybody is like that. Now that I'm 46, I understand that not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. And I actually, it was my husband who helped me understand. He was like, you and your dad have this ability to find something fascinating in every human being that you meet. And it's telling that he says you and your dad. I mean, obviously, my dad was somebody who I look up to and I learned a ton from him. And I am here, obviously, in many ways because of him. But I also think that was the Quaker experience of, you know, the notion that there's that of God in everyone, mm-hmm. And that we are all these vessels carrying God around with us. Well, if you meet a person in any way, shape, or form that has God in them, how are you not going to treat them with the utmost respect and the utmost fascination, right?
That's the question of the age.
Right.
Because every religion teaches, you know, that to some degree, mm-hmm. you know, that mm-hmm. we are all connected in this divine, mysterious
right.
way. And whether you call that the Holy Spirit or whether you mm-hmm. call it the source or the divine spark, mm-hmm. whatever you call it, it is something that universally is recognized as a uniting factor. And yet,
yep.
there is always that sense of us and them.
Well, and the Quakers call it the light, you know, the inner light.
The inner light.
That we all have. And, you know, that little spark that's there for everybody. And it used to bother me that they were like putting that on everybody. I was like, but what about the people who don't buy into that? And you know,
well, yeah,
that used to really upset me. And now that I am 46, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can see that spark in someone. And I can honor that spark and I can honor that light and I can honor that person for who they are, whether they would like to acknowledge that or not.
Yes.
That is mine to see.
Yes. Nobody's business how you feel about them.
Right. Like it is mine to see that spark and that light in that person. And everybody has it. Like we are all made in the image of God, not just like the chosen few.
Right.
All of us, you know.
How, and I'm going to ask both in the kind of general context, but then also in the context of the last 2 years, how have your students changed the way you encounter God?
Oh, wow. Well, that is a really good question.
Thank you.
I would say in the last 2 years, it has become so clear that all that matters is that we love each other, that the other stuff isn't really important, and that totally changes how you encounter God, right? Because when you look at the face of another human being, like you're loving that person for being a human and for being created by God. And so when I was teaching at my desk last year, I had to look into their faces on the computer without being in the room with them. And when I finally got to hug them, and I don't think I'll ever take that for granted again. I do vividly remember times like being at the end of the day, being like, oh my gosh, if one more child touches me, I'm going to explode. Right. And then I would get home to my own poor children. I'd be like, yeah, I'm sorry. You can't touch me right now. But I think COVID has changed that the last 2 years to have an appreciation to actually touch a human being again. And even now that's better this year than it was last year. I mean, even this semester better than last semester.
Yep.
We've just gone mask optional. And like, I am seeing faces that I haven't seen in 2 years. It was almost exactly 2 years ago now. Right.
Yeah.
And they've changed so much and they've grown so much. And then there are kids that came during COVID that I'd never seen their faces before.
That's the predicament I'm in right now is that
you're in the same boat.
Yeah, and these are people that I'm meeting almost again for the first time, only because I'm now seeing the lower half of their face for the first time, and they look
totally different.
Just a little different, from what my mind had wanted to make them look like.
And the number of my kids who have had like braces, and so their whole their whole shape of their faces have changed, or they're like approaching puberty, so like your face changes, like everything changes. And you know, I looked at a kid the other day and I was like, I have never seen your face before. What a beautiful smile you have. And you know, she was like, yeah, Ms. Thompson, you've got a good smile too. I didn't know you had that, you know. And she hadn't. She'd only seen me in chapel with my mask on.
Yeah.
So you know,
I've seen skinny eyes and have to assume that you're smiling.
Right. And I think so. I mean, I definitely feel like my approach and my appreciation and my encounters with God have changed. And I'm much more open to seeing things too. I mean, I don't get me wrong. COVID, I have nothing nice to say about COVID, but I am also that like weird person that can find the silver linings and the rainbows. The amount of stuff that I learned during COVID, like not only how to like work a computer and build community through it, but also how to walk through the woods and listen to the wind and listen to the birds and watch the hawks and smell the deer. Did you know that you could smell deer? They have a bit of a stench, which I didn't know before. Mm-hmm. I thought they were skunks, and they were not. They were deer.
Yep.
Yeah. Mind blown, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I just feel like I see the world differently, but better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And there are times I definitely still feel more comfortable outside. I really don't love being in a building, yeah, in a room with a whole lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I was ever actually comfortable with that before, but now I can say it.
You were the kid under the bench hiding from her.
No, but I mean, in church, I am always sitting on the end. You uh-huh. will never see me in the middle of a pew. And I have been that way my whole life. Mm-mm. And if you do, just know that I might have a panic attack and that like somebody's going to have to get out of the way.
I will keep that in mind. And if I ever see you,
if you see me in the middle of a pew, you might want to come rescue me.
I'll say, yeah, who's got you home?
I'm being held captive. And I think that's why I liked acolyting too, because I wasn't in the mix.
Yeah. Yeah. Set apart and you get to walk off stage.
Yeah. And I loved theater because I wasn't in the mix. Did a lot of theater growing up. And like now, like I love leading chapel because I'm not sitting in it, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I do. That might be reason I enjoyed theater because, yeah.
I loved being in the choir.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You're kind of close together, but you're all facing the same direction.
Right.
You're doing the same thing. You're there for a reason.
And you're working, you're working together. Mm-hmm. There's community there.
For 20 years, I was in the choir loft at St. Mary's, not the choir loft, the chancel, at St. Mary's Cathedral. 20 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah. Every Sunday, without fail, having exactly that, having like, this is something to worry about. This is something that I'm responsible for. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, a lot of the times it was like, this is the reason that I'm here, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to any sort mm-hmm. of, you know, spiritual health or maintenance. It's mm-hmm. not here to do my job as a singer.
Yep.
And that has been an adjustment in the last 7 months.
Yeah.
That, you know, I come back in from children's chapel and sometimes my family's there, sometimes they're not. So they like to go to St. Mary's still. Mm-hmm. And especially on those days when my family's not there, all the other kids have gone back. It's like, well, my responsibility is done.
I can worship now.
Now, how do we get into that? How do we get into that space? So that's been something that has been, maybe that'll be my Lenten discipline is figuring out just how to sit silently and accept grace.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love that. Taking that on rather than giving something up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure there will be
a lot of things to give up in terms of, you know.
I feel like we've had 2 years of Lent, let's be honest.
Yes. Yes.
It was Lent when all this began.
Jubilee at this point, I think.
You know? I mean, we've had Easter a couple of times, but mm-hmm. I mean, it's time for a real one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I realize we get a little one every Sunday,
it's been a very tentative sort of Easter, you know? Like,
we're going to talk about resurrection. Hallelujah.
9 days of power.
Yeah.
Your career is amazing.
Thank you.
And you have, you know, run the gamut from early childhood. And do you work a lot with high school students at all?
Or? Only nowadays when I'm called on to mm-hmm. do it, which I love because I taught these big kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were my babies and now they're taller than me. But, you know, every once in a while, something will happen, you know, within our St. Mary's community mm-hmm. Where they need an extra someone.
Yeah.
And they'll call me to come over and I'll walk the halls and hug girls and love them where they are. And, you know, we've had some junk in the last year and I have spent a lot more time with the teenagers than I usually do.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I was there at the right time and that I did have those formative years with them so that when they did hit these awful speed bumps that they have, mm-hmm. I can be there to hug them and hold them and say, you know what? I went through this in high school too.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to tell you you're going to feel good tomorrow, but I am going to sit here with you while you hurt and I'm going to hurt with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I'm going to hold you. And just like I did when you were little, you know, like, I'm not going to put you on my lap, but I'm going to hold you. Like,
yeah, to be able to.
Hey, neighbor, welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. know what this is? Maybe if I press this button. This is a cassette player with a little cassette in here, and there's nothing written on it, so we'll just have to play it to see what it is. Do you ever imagine things? Are they scary things? Are they scary things? Do you ever imagine things? Things you'd like to have? Did you ever see a cat's eyes in the dark and wonder what they were? Did you ever pretend about things like that before? Did you ever pretend about things like that? Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? In the garden of your mind. You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind. In the garden of your mind. It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow. Imagine every person that you see is somewhat different, from every other person in the world. Some can do some things. Some can do others. Did you ever think of the many things you've learned to do? Many things you did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind. It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow. Did you feel like going like that? Let's give the fish some food. Mr. McFeely, I didn't order any whistle. That's what they call a slide whistle. Did you feel like going like that? There are so many things to learn about in this world. So many people who can help us learn. So many people who can help us learn. Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? In the garden of your mind. You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind. In the garden of your mind. It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow.
Thank you so much for listening. Faithfully Memphis is on WYXR every Thursday at 8 a.m., and you can also catch us on a podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Mud Camp and Camp Abel at St. Columba are happening this summer, and I know that spots are filling fast, so definitely get in touch with Matthew Earhart out there, St. Columba, columba.org. Thank you for listening. This is Drew Massengale for Faithfully Memphis. Keep on learning. Soldier.
soul.